Welcome to Resurrection Recovery, a ministry of hope and healing provided by Church of the Resurrection. This podcast is produced by Resurrection Recovery participants as a way to share their experience, strength, and hope as they move through the recovery journey. You can join us every Thursday night at 6 p.m. for a community meal and a personal story, and then support groups at 7 p.m. Check our website at core.org/recovery for special events, location, and a group that might fit your need.
Thank you, Tom. Now, I can't step over here, right?
Well, looks like we're going to be okay.
I think we turned it down, so I think we're going to be okay.
Testing. Never mind. So, I'll tell you what I'll do. I have a couple of props, because Sandy brought props last week. And so I brought my own props. He gave me an idea. And I did make a few notes just so I can try to remember what happened in my life. This book right here, I'm Lyndon. I'm an alcoholic and an addict and a whatever else you might have going on there. If I look at this book, it's got my name in it. It was Linda Shirley back then because I was still had my married name. It says I've been sober since February 12th, 1983. So the grace goes to God. And I'll tell you what, when I first got here, I couldn't even say his name. It would stick in my throat. Is that better? Okay. But what I want to talk about a little bit first is how I got to life recovery. And it's a real interesting story, and it involves Tom Langhofer and God, because I'm a congregational care minister, so we go to hospitals and pray for people that are in the hospital for surgery or whatever. And so I was scheduled to go visit with a gentleman and pray with him before his surgery. And I got a call that morning, and the lady that does the coordinating, she said, "Well, Mr. So-and-so has been released." And I thought, oh, shoot. So I can kick back today and, you know, everything will be okay. And she said, "But would you go see somebody else?" I said, "Well, okay, I'm dressed, I'm ready to go. Sure, I'll go see somebody else." And she said, "Well, it's Tom and Steve Langhofer's mother." And I knew Steve because with my congregational care ministry, I have a lot of stuff going on with him, but I didn't know Tom. I knew he had just been promoted to be with the recovery part of the church. So anyway, I thought, I cannot go pray for two pastors' mothers. I mean, a mother, you know, that just didn't sound like that. Maybe they could pray. But anyway, so I went anyway, and so I walk in the room, and here's Mom, and she's like in her 90s, and then Tom's sitting there, and so he introduced himself, and I introduced myself, and before I went to pray for her, I said to him, I said, "Congratulations on your new position at the church in recovery." And I said, "That's great." I said, "I've been sober 36 years. And he said, "Oh," he said, "I'm looking for a gal to help get our recovery system up, our recovery program up and going." And he said, "I've got a couple of guys. But," he said, "I really need a woman. Would you be interested in doing that?" And I said, "Yes." In my mind was like, no, I do not want to go do that. I was already pretty involved in a lot of the stuff with the church. Hi, Kelly. And so God had to release a guy from the hospital. He had me be willing to have me get to the church or to the hospital, and Steve had just left. Tom had just gotten there, so I had to, you know, God was doing all this stuff just to get me to the place where Tom could say, "Hey, we need some help. How about?" So I joined their little merry band of four, I think it was, when we first started. And shoot, we had 10 people, I guess, maybe at our first meeting. And look at it now. I mean, it's awesome. So I wanted to share that just because I mean, this is what's kept me, continued to keep me sober since we started this program up. Prior to that, I was like hit or miss back in AA, because Alcoholics Anonymous is actually how I got sober and came into this program. I knew that the program was about God, like I said, and God and I really did not, we were not on a first name basis, because everything that had happened in my tender young life, I sobered up when I was 36, had been a result of something God had done to mess my life up, because, you know, my life was pretty messed up, and I just blamed it all on him, because I figured, you know, it was certainly not my fault. I didn't have anything to do with all this stuff that was going on. So, I was, to show you where I started at, just so you know that I am qualified, I started drinking when I was 15, and my dad was an alcoholic, my mom's an alcoholic, my cousin's an alcoholic, my this is an alcoholic, my that's an alcoholic. It just runs rampant in our family. So, I mean, I didn't have a prayer, really. So I started drinking when I was 15, and we went had a slumber party, and everybody brought liquor from their parents' house, and we put it all in this big barrel, and we drank it. And I got drunker than a skunk, and had the most wonderful night of my life, I thought. What it did was it filled the hole that I had developed from the time I had been about 10, when I had an incident happen with my father that I will not go into, but it set up my life to be full of fear, mistrust, anger, which I carried throughout the rest of my life. I continued to use that one experience to go on and continue to drink. And I never drank just to have a glass of wine or something. I drank to get drunk and fill that hole that was constantly there. Just to tell you how bad it was, I was 18 and I was going to a cosmetology school, and we went out for lunch one day to have gin and orange juice, and along with our lunch. Don't ask me where that came from or why we did it, but so I was taking a medication for asthma that revs up your heart rate. And then I took very little orange juice and mostly gin. And so I got back to the beauty school and went up and sat on a long table like we have, and proceeded to pass out on the floor in the beauty school, and fell flat on my face, and they hand carried me over to the psych ward at the hospital across the street. It was Baptist Hospital in Columbia, South Carolina. And so I wake up after 11 hours of being unconscious, after they did whatever they did, with my father and my mother looking, you know, this far from my face. And so what they thought had happened is that I'd tried to kill myself. And that wasn't the case. I mean, I was just drinking and having a good time. You know, I don't remember one word that my father or my mother said to me about, maybe you shouldn't have done that. Gosh, do we need to get you some help? Of course, then they would have had to, you know, fess up on their own drinking and drugging. So I continued that. You'd think that'd be enough. No, it wasn't enough. So I continued to drink through my 20s and my 30s. I got a job as a travel agent, which was right up my alley, because they would send us on these trips everywhere for free with free alcohol, because they were wining and dining you so you could tell them about the property you were at or the airline that you flew. Well, I never remembered where I was or what I'd seen. So it was like I just had a lot of free alcohol and got drunk a lot. So that worked out really well for about 10 years. There was two other times that I OD'd So maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe I was trying to kill myself because I was pretty miserable. So one time I took 10 or 12 Valium and I drank a bunch of vodka, and that had me down for a while. And then another time I took 18 antidepressants because one wasn't working. So I thought, well, we'll just keep taking them until they work. And then I was drinking on top of that. And that had me, I think I nearly died that time. I had two or three days after that, I didn't know my own kids. It took me a week to quit jumping off the floor when somebody walked behind me. So it was a pretty ugly scene. I drank at work. I worked for a cardiologist, and I was doing stress tests on people all day long. And I would go out at lunch and get drunk and perform medical procedures on people. Now, this is, I'll give myself a little bit of credit. This is back in the day when you could go out and drink at lunch. I mean, that was kind of the norm. Maybe some of you don't remember that, but I do. maybe it was just me. But at any rate, so, you know, those are the kind of things that I did to qualify me to have really been needing some help. I remember one time I made a statement that I needed to lose some weight, but I'd probably have to quit drinking. And I mean, consequently, I didn't lose any weight. So I knew probably 10 years before I quit drinking that I had an alcohol problem that I needed to get some help with. But you know, we don't get here till we get here. So I got married. I had a 10-year alcohol fraught marriage with all the verbal and physical abuse that goes along with two people that are drinking and, you know, not being very nice to each other. That ended in divorce, thank you God. And then I proceeded to have two young kids that I was sole responsible for. And in the big book in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that you will not regret the past, or something about...
Don't wish to shut the door on it.
Yeah, don't wish to shut the door on it. And there's still one thing that I have to disagree with Alcoholics Anonymous is that I missed my kids growing up because they were 3 and 6 when I divorced, and I'd been drinking that whole time, and they were 10 and 13 when I quit. So I have a little 2.5-year-old granddaughter now that I have the blessing to be able to see my kids. You know, I can see my kids through her, so I'm getting a second chance on that. So then I started, after my divorce, I drank worse, and it got worse and worse. I don't know how I never got a DUI. I don't have a clue how that never happened. I drank in the car with the girls, going here, going there. It was always about, you know, a glass of bourbon, and that's just the way we traveled. I remember one time when I was working at a bank, it goes back a little bit, I was about 19, and I was working at First National Bank downtown. I had to be there at 7 in the morning, and my roommate and I would drink vodka and grapefruit juice on the way to work at 7, because grapefruit juice is a morning drink. And so it seemed pretty natural to me that you would put a little vodka in there, and you know, everything would be okay. So I was with this person who was a recovering alcoholic. I was having a relationship, and I was trying to be the drinker in a relationship where the other person was sober. Well, that doesn't work very well. So I was told one evening after about 3 years into this relationship, Linda, I really can't be around you anymore. And that's all that was said. There was nothing said about drinking, nothing said about, I mean, I was doing pot, I was doing a little cocaine, you know, you kind of push the Quaaludes back in the day were a blessing. Now they don't even make them anymore, which I really think is a good state of affairs. At any rate, so I went out and I got especially plastered that night, and I went back home, and about midnight I called the suicide hotline, and I said, I need to talk to somebody. And they said, well, let me have your phone number because they don't want to lose you. Well, of course, I gave them the wrong phone number, and then I hung up the phone. So I got to think the next morning, you know, something's not right here. I mean, if you're wanting to kill yourself in the middle of the night, this is not a good thing. So the person that I'd been having the relationship offered to take me to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting down at 63rd Street, which used to be, I don't even know if it's still there, I'm assuming it is. But that's where a lot of people came off from the streets, and so I had my first meeting there. Then I went over to 80th Street, which was the place of my sobering up. It took me 3 years to get this God thing, maybe 4 years to get the God thing. I had to use the coffee cup, as we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not what is part of life recovery. This is my part of the story that was really where I got most of my sobriety. Life recovery has kept me with a God that I understand and with Jesus Christ. So there's light at the end of my tunnel. So I lived at AA, lived there three times a day if I had to. Whatever I had to do, did not take the next drink, because my MO was to take the next drink or the next pill. Anyway, I was clean and sober for 5 months, and I thought, well, if I'm going to be living like this and feel like this, I'm going to have to kill myself or drink again. Because living sober, in my mind, with everything that bombarded me that had not been able to get through for the last 25 years, you know, I just couldn't handle it. So somebody recommended in the program that I might want to try Valley Hope before. And then if you still feel like you need to drink or cure yourself, then you can go ahead and, you know, do what you need to do. So I went up to Atchison, went to Valley Hope, and that was actually Atchison where I was born. So I went back to Atchison and had a rebirthing, if you will. 30 days there saved my life. And when I first walked in, I thought, these are a bunch of sick people. How is this going to be good for me? Of course, that was the same thing I thought when I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so it did. It saved my life. And stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous throughout the rest of my sobriety, faithfully. Then I made the journey. I thought, I got this idea that I needed to start going to church. And I really couldn't figure out where that came from. Stop it. And so I started going to a unity church, like the one that's out in Lee Summit. It's kind of non-denominational, it would not be religion, you know. I wouldn't get too tanked in on it. So anyway, I was out there for a couple of years, and then I decided, well, something is missing here. I don't know what's missing. So I thought, I don't know what's going on. But my sister said, well, why don't you come with me over to this big church over on Rowan 135th? And I said, I'm not going to any first of all, I'm not going to a organized religion Methodist church. Can you hear me? Now you can. Thank you, Sandy. And then secondly, I'm not going to a mega church because, my goodness sakes. Anyway, long story short, she drug me over here one day. It was the beginning of Easter series. And I sat down, and the pastor, Adam, started talking about Jesus, and he was talking about scriptures and all this kind of stuff. And I thought, whoa, I did not realize that Jesus was missing. But that was what, in my life, it took God a long time to get through to me. But since I started coming here, I never left. I don't think I missed a Sunday for 6 years or something like that. But I was really, really glad when Life Recovery started up, because it's still the same 12 steps that I was familiar with, but it's with Jesus Christ as our higher power. And as Tom says, you know, if you're not there yet, that's okay, because I was without God and stayed sober for probably 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, so don't let that scare you away. It's a good group of people here. Did I miss anything? Probably not. I feel like I've come full circle, you know, from not believing in God at all to having to be a coffee cup, to having to be this, having to be that, and coming around and having it be God that gives me the grace to stay sober and the Lord Jesus Christ that helps me get through my day. And today, I'll tell you what, I got up, I was having this great day, and a family member calls, and the whole thing goes to hell, excuse me, God, in a handbasket. Now, I'm here to say that, I mean, it's not big tragedies in my life, but it's things like that that can set me off kilter, and I can feel like, you know, the gin would look good, but it doesn't look good, so I'm not about to do that. But it, you know, I can get through those kinds of days. I've got many, many people I can call on. I come up to the church and bug a pastor. I do go to AA occasionally, but primarily this is my recovery place right here. So keep coming back, guys and gals, because this place will grow on you and people get to know you and love you, and when you can't love yourself. So I think that's, oh, one other thing. If I ever thought, these are my two tools, my Alcoholics Anonymous book, and then I have this little journal that I found about 15, 20 years ago that has got 2 months in it of journaling from through December of 1979 to January of 1979. If I ever thought that I really didn't have a drinking problem, I just get this book out, and it's just little short stuff. I mean, it's about half a page. And every day I was going somewhere and I was getting smashed. I was getting drunk. I was taking a pill. I was doing this. I was doing that. And I think God put this in my path when I needed to see it again. So, there's no question. No question in my mind. With that, I'll pass. And what do you do with this thing now, Tom? Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you much, Linda.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you would like more information about this ministry or Church of the Resurrection, visit our website at core.org/recovery, where you can find a listing of support groups that meet every Thursday. If you would like more immediate attention, our congregational care ministries have several support options such as prayer requests, counseling, etc. at core.org/care. Thank you for listening today.